So right now, more than ever, it's really important for all of us to support the creators that we enjoy and who make the content that we consume. And that's because as creators, like, we really don't have any safety nets. So as artists who don't have, like, a stable income, Cassandra and I lost a lot of our income because of the COVID shutdowns. And so I do want to especially thank our patrons right now more than ever, because your contributions are like a super keeping this thing going. So thank y'all. If you want to become a patron, you can go over to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. The link will be in the description. Specifically, I do want to thank some of our I Know Her level patrons. Those are Jen A, Christian, Daniel V, Yasmin, Jason B, Valentina R, Adri, Cassandra G, Alana F, Linda M, Jocelyn D, Amanda, Evelyn, Ronnie L, Jerry R, Abigail D, Aranya, and Kimberly B. Y'all really are getting us through this time, so if you want to keep seeing content, feel free to support us. Again, that's patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. I really, really appreciate anything you can contribute, like, even if it's a dollar, like, for real, that really goes a long way. Yeah, so now, let's go to the show.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
All right, so to open, or before we get started, I want to humbly with you recognize and acknowledge that we are on the land of Southwest Indigenous peoples, including the Apache, the Pueblo, and the Navajo.
I also want to take the opportunity to thank our sponsors. There are many of them, so I'm just going to name them right away. First of all, my home college, the Honors College, Associated Students of New Mexico State University, Borderlands and Ethnic Studies Dialogue Series, Chicano Program, the College of Arts and Sciences, Stan Fulton Endowed Chair, Dr. Cynthia Bejarano, Gender and Sexuality Studies, / Interdisciplinary Studies. Muchas gracias.
Issues of racism, anti-blackness within the Latinx community, gender violence, transphobia, capitalism, and the militarization of the border, which are particularly important to the Las Cruces community, this university, and overall, the border region. Cassandra's radical work as a community organizer from El Paso and a content creator has educated her following in her platform, Chicanisma, in matters of gender identity, machismo, motherhood, children advocacy, environmental racism, gentrification, anti-indigeneity, xenophobia, uplifting border communities, and challenging neoliberal notions of equity. And I particularly want to emphasize Cassandra's active outspokenness regarding the feminicidios in Ciudad Juarez, and for saying their names. Thank you so much. Ruben is a writer, producer, speaker, and educator from Southeast LA. You might also know them as Queer Chicano Chisme. Their work targets issues of social justice, particularly as they pertain to queer trans people of color. Ruben views word of mouth, oral traditions as chisme, as a tool of resistance for marginalized communities. In doing so, Ruben's podcast, YouTube channel, and other media platforms highlight the lived experience of activists and creators of color. Bitter Brown Fans is a podcast hosted by Ruben and Cassandra that tackles social, political, emotional, and community issues. It was born of a necessity to take Latinx, Chicanx community dialogue beyond merely identity empowerment and feel-good comedic fluff that although have their place over saturated social media and into a realm that is critical of identity and society while advocating for marginalized people. They also aim to disrupt liberal complacency in systems of oppression by living up to their motto, dismantling shit while talking shit.
We don't have microphones. That's what it is. I think that's where it feels weird.
Oh. Hi. Everyone can hear me, maybe? No? Hi, I'm Ruben. I use he, they pronouns.
I'm Cassandra, she, her pronouns.
Yeah, and we're here to talk about a lot of things. This is actually the first time me and her see each other in a year. So whenever you hear our podcast, know that like there is like no, like we're not in the same room, like rarely. Maybe like two episodes have been in the same room. So that speaks, I think, to like the power of the internet to like connect us, because we met once in person and then we were like, we need a podcast together. Millennials.
Yes. So we want to thank NMSU and all the, what are we calling them? Are
they
sponsors? Sorry. Sponsors for getting us here. I've actually been trying to get Ruben to come down to El Paso and UTIP was like, no. So, shout out NMSU. Yeah. But we're really excited to be here. I mean, Las Cruces is very, like, I mean, I live in El Paso, so it's not, like, this foreign land to me, but to Ruben it is, so, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. So today we, do you want to start already, officially? We have 45 minutes, so time just flies by sometimes. So we want to... We were brought here to talk about, like, International Women's Month kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we want to start by, like, centering women of color, right?
Yes.
And I think, like, one of the women of color that's, like, really on the news right now is...
Elizabeth Warren. So
for those who do not know... Do you want
to... No, go ahead.
Okay. Elizabeth Warren, you know... believed, I'm trying to be generous, believed like her white family's like missed that somewhere down the line there was an indigenous ancestor, right? And that somehow made her indigenous. And so she took on this identity like 2 decades ago when she got a position in Harvard University. And Harvard University actually in like one of their papers put out like, oh, we hire our first like woman of color, our first indigenous woman, Elizabeth Warren, right? And she's really used that to kind of take up spots that, you know, that were promoted to be for marginalized women, right? And in recently, a speech by one of her colleagues, thank you, Professor Drusilla Cornell, I think is her last name. I'm, like, blanking a little bit. Put out a speech being like, yeah, she's been, like, a career politician that, like, if she couldn't pretend to be black, so she pretended to be Native, right? And for a lot of us, that really, it really hurt that somebody like that was put on, like, a national stage and, like, given such validity, especially by, like, social justice advocates.
Yes. But, so... We've for our last 2 episodes have, well, one hasn't come out yet, but for our last episode, we were focusing a lot on the election, like we're going to continue to do so throughout the year. And one of the things we had mentioned was it before Elizabeth Warren dropped out? I'm not sure. So talking about Elizabeth Warren dropping out and all of a sudden it's just like this, what are we calling it? Like... just white feminists on social media that are, like, mourning her as if she had died. I guess her...
Her candidacy.
Yes. But it's just this very... this whole thing that Elizabeth Warren is a progressive while dismissing that she took up this role as an indigenous woman conveniently and, like, no one ever bringing it up where it's, like, Joe Biden and Bloomberg got, you know, their asses handed to them. Rightfully so, but like no one has ever brought that onto the stage in like a political mainstream thing that Elizabeth Warren did this, and we're all supposed to conveniently like forget that she has done this, right? This appropriation of indigenous culture, taking up space, claiming she's a woman of color while running on this campaign that's supposed to be for women. So it's very, I don't even think problematic is the right word. It's a lot more than that. But right now we're seeing just like the outpouring grief that that is supposed to make us like feel sorry for her under like the guise of sexism and misogyny, which is real. I think that we've talked a lot in 2016 about like Hillary Clinton and all her bullshit and how, you know, she's an imperialist. and she harms a lot of communities, particularly in Latin America. So with Hillary, we saw it as well, right? She's a woman, so she's going to face sexism and misogyny during her campaign. So did Elizabeth Warren, and she's going to continue to do so, just like all women, right? Especially like on a national level. But that doesn't erase the wrongs that they have done or like the harm that they have caused, particularly to marginalized communities and women of color. So for all of Warren's supporters to expect all of us to mourn her in the way that they're mourning her is very... I don't know what the word is. I mean, it's just very, like, white feminist, obviously. But it's just whack to me. The audacity and entitlement of it.
Which is funny because as the campaign trail progresses, right, and people are like, you have to, like, support Bernie Sanders or, like, you have to, endorse Bernie Sanders. And there's this big push for that, right? And people are like, you know, she has to self-care. She has to take time off, right? And it's like... self, like, how we've gotten to a point where, like, social justice, like, terminology is, like, used to, like, to help people empower, like, be complacent with the way things are, right? Like, self-care applies to folks who, you know, who are out there, like, actually, like, doing the work, not politicians who are comfy sitting in, like, million-dollar homes. Like, as a public servant, like as someone who's an elected official, she has like a responsibility to folks, right? But because folks project their own experiences onto these politicians, right, and they serve as these like, you know, emblems of themselves in this greater political playing field, there's this outpouring of empathy for her in a way that isn't being shown for people who are really struggling with medical bills, with student debt, right, who really are actually marginalized, right? And it's reached, today it reached a whole new level of ridiculousness when you see her campaign staff, like, get Elizabeth Warren tattoos that, like, okay, fine, y'all experienced, like, a shared experience, you want to commemorate that, like, fine. That's one thing. Another thing is to get number code on your wrists, right? Specifically in a time when, like, the only, you know, Jewish, like, presidential candidate, like, is, like, reaching, like, such an, like, a critical point in their campaign. And not only that, another staffer got, like, blood and teeth in, like, a Times New Roman, like, tattooed on their skull, which, like, is cringe enough, but, like, when you contextualize it in, like, you know, the history of white supremacy in America, you understand that, like, blood and soil is, like, a very common rallying cry by white supremacists. So the fact that they were oblivious to this kind of demonstrates the level of, like, white feminism at which they were working, right? And just to, like, be clear, like, white, like, not all white feminists are, like, not white women who are feminists are abide by white feminism.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
So, yes, and also you don't have to be white to be a white feminist, though the majority are. But that, yeah, you could also just not be white but still uphold white feminism.
Would you like to unpack white feminism?
Well, I unpacked white feminism on Friday. Sorry for those who weren't there. But I did do a workshop on it. And it was, I don't know, like very long. So to try to, you know, shorten it, it's just a lot. Like, I don't know how to, it's just very like white, you know?
What's like the elevator pitch of white feminism?
The elevator pitch? I don't know. It's like pussy hats, I guess. I don't know. It's very, you know, I always like, so funny thing though, I did start talking, because I always tell people I used to be a white feminist, which is why I emphasize, like, you don't have to be white to be a white feminist, because I learned, like a lot of us, white, or feminism, through the white, like, lens. So when I was 16, I had learned about, you know, women getting the right to vote and having the right to work during World War II, and, like, what's her name? Elizabeth? No, not Elizabeth Warren.
Susan B. Anthony?
Susan B. Anthony. There's another one. Elizabeth Stanton. Is that her name? Katie. Okay. Why did I say it? Okay. Doesn't matter.
Katie?
So, yeah. So, you know, like through that, and I felt empowered because I'm like, I'm a woman. They're women. They fought for my right, you know, like to vote. And like they did all these things and I felt very empowered by it. And my feminism was very just about being a woman and about girl empowerment. And also I was 16, right? But as I grew older, it was like that until I was about in my early 20s when I started actually learning about race and racism and how that intersects. But before that, I was just all about, you know, I would have been like, I actually went to go see Hillary Clinton when she was in El Paso, like when she ran in 2008. I wasn't like, oh my God, Hillary, but I was like, oh, cool, like woman president, you know? So I was definitely on that mindset as well. And it's just, I don't know, I just think that's how it's like a lot of history in the US, right? It's just like very white, it's like very colonizer. And that's how feminism is presented. It's like, you got the right to vote, you got the right to work, and like, you know, like fuck the patriarchy, like let's kill men, like that's it, right? That's what they say on Tumblr. That's what they say. And like little glitter things. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's like it. And then when you actually go back and think about like who did these women fight for to get the right to vote? You know, they didn't fight for mine. They were actually really racist. You know, like there's this quote by Susan B. Anthony that said, I will cut one of my arms off before, like pretty much saying before she helps black people get the right to vote, which is like very fucking dramatic and racist. But it's like that's the level they were at. But we're not taught that, you know, we're taught that these were like women that champions for all women. And it's like when we say women got the right to vote in 1920, it's like which women, right? Because indigenous women didn't get a right to vote. They weren't even considered citizens, right? Which is a whole other conversation. Asian women, black women. And if we're still talking about voting, you know, black communities and Latinx communities still don't necessarily have the right to vote. You know, we say, yeah, everyone has the right to vote. But if we even look at Super Tuesday or any election, voter suppression is still a real thing in Texas. 750 polls closed predominantly black and Latinx communities, and that's very intentional. So if, you know, to celebrate the 19th Amendment as a woman of color, it's not a real thing. When we talk about white, you know, women got the right to go to work, you know, during World War II, it's like, which women, you know, because women of color have always worked, you know, we haven't had the privilege to not work. And there's a lot of differences between white feminism, like white women's history versus women of color. You know, in the 70s, they were fighting for reproductive justice, which is something that affects not just women, a lot of folks, right? But their main focus was getting a right for abortion, for example, while like women of color were fighting to not get sterilized, right, without their consent. So there's a lot of differences that are always just all of our experiences are white women's experiences, and that is definitely not the case. So I don't know how to summarize white feminism, but it's very just focused on men being the enemy and patriarchy being the enemy, when our enemies or our oppression as women of color is capitalism, is racism, is white supremacy, is a lot of other things that white feminists don't necessarily care about, or like they say they do because they love the word intersectionality, like that's their fucking favorite word, but they don't really know what it means, or like they don't actually apply it, right? Because like we could all hashtag intersectionality in our bios, but that doesn't mean anything. Like what are we actually doing, right? What are white women love to say they're intersectional feminists or I don't know, however they misuse that word. But it's like, what do you understand how you benefit from these systems of oppression? Do you ever stop and think like that you are inherently racist? Like a lot of us are anti-black from just being in this society. Like what are we doing to actually unpack that and actually like uplift women of color and not take up space, right? Without just like being performative about it at the Women's March every year. So.
Oh God, the Women's March.
Yeah.
I went to two. The first time I was like, okay, let's see what this is about. And at the first, I lived in the Bay Area in California, and like, you take like the train everywhere, like the Metro, BART. And I was like on the BART, and like, I see all these people with like little pink hats. And, like, I legit thought, like, you know Bob's Burgers? I legit thought, like, why is everybody, like, in, like, what's their Louise? Louise, like, cosplay. And, like, and then I found out that wasn't a thing. And I'm like, so why pink pussy hats? And then, it hit me. And I was like, oh, crap, this is not the wave.
But yeah, to like summarize intersectional, white feminism, it's a type of fight for like gender equality that doesn't take an intersectional approach, which means it ignores like capitalism, racism, imperialism, and so forth, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the end of our talk. Thank you so much.
Hold up. I'm good.
You're good?
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
And I think for a lot of us, when we find things like feminism, for example, or like in my case, like, you know, I found like Chicanismo, and we find these movements and we're like really empowered by them, right? We're like, oh, I come from a history of resilience, or like, you know how like white women like to say, like, you know, we're like the witches you couldn't burn or whatever, you know, like that type of thing. Sorry, I just go back to like that meme where it's like, you know, white women be like, we're the witches you couldn't burn, and then in the bottom it's like the witches they couldn't burn. It's like a bunch of women in like clan clothing. Like but so I think about like those waves, right? Like how we find movements that are empowering to us, but then if we're not critical of it, we risk being stuck in like the first wave of that movement. So for Chicanismo, for example, like the
Raise your hand if you know what Chicano or Chicanismo is. Okay. Because one time we did a talk for 30 minutes just talking shit about Chicanismo. And, like, everyone, you know, after a while, no one said anything. I'm like, do you all know what Chicanismo is? And they're like... I was like, oh, okay.
Where was that weird. Again?
I don't know. Yeah, I was in California, which was weird.
Was it the one we were standing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So that was embarrassing. So, okay. So the Chicano. What does Chicano mean? Some say it means Mexican American.
Are you looking at me for the alternative? I mean, I feel like it's just like, and it's more foundational like thing. It's like a commitment to like helping your community, right?
I mean.
And it often for folks who are from Latin America. That's the way I came into it. I also came into Chicanismo differently. I didn't identify as Chicano until I was in community with a lot of folks who were from South America, who were Salvadoran, who were Central American, who were indigenous, and who were non-Latinx black folks who identified as Chicanx, and also like non-Latinx Filipino folks. And they had a broader understanding of the term. And so I was like, oh, this makes sense for me. Because I just never felt comfortable with like Latin, like Latino, Latina, Latinx, or Mexican American, or even American, or even just Mexican. I just, when people used to ask me like, you know, oh, what are you? I used to say, well, my parents are from Puebla, and I was born in East LA. Like, I literally had to give that whole spiel. Yeah. So it's a political identity.
A little political identity, and there was the Chicano movement from the 70s when we saw like a Black Power movement. You know, during the civil rights, and like a lot of movements, the Chicano movement has been very problematic, very violent, sexist, homophobic, all of those things, right, that exist in a lot of communities, that exist in a lot of movements and organizations. I felt really empowered by it as well when I don't know how old I was. This was like mid-20s, I think, when I found out the Chicano movement, and I also felt very empowered by it because I also didn't like identifying as Latina. I also didn't know what to identify as or where I fit in if I wasn't a white feminist, but I wasn't black. And there's like, for me, I didn't know, like, I just didn't know where I would fit into that conversation, which is why I started Chicanismo, because I was empowered by Chicano politics and like Chicano feminism.
Not by Ana Castillo.
No, I don't know her. But yeah, so that's how I came into Chicana, and I don't know if you all follow me, but I have a blog called Chicanismo, and Ruben has one called Queer Chicano Chisme. So we definitely identified or do as like Chicano or Chicana, Chicanx. But when we met in Portland, like I guess throughout like the years, the more you read, right, you realize that for us, the Chicano movement was just very. You know, like, I'm saying that, like, movements and orgs and spaces, all of these things exist, right? All of these problematic things. But then you grow and you learn and you build and you say, this doesn't work. how can we make this better? The Chicano movement hasn't necessarily done that since the 70s. It's just kind of been stuck in this very nationalist, machismo way of thinking. And people over the years, of course, have critiqued it and have tried to better it. And there have been like this much progress, but overall, nothing really has changed. So when I met Ruben, when we did a panel in Portland, both of us identifying as Chicano, but both feeling very, like, sometimes, like, I don't even want to identify as Chicana or Chicano because of these things, and is it worth saving? Can we make it better? Should we just, you know, throw it in the trash, right? Because sometimes that's what you got to do. And that's kind of why I think we, me and Ruben, had a connection to that. And also that a big thing is talking about empowerment for me, right? Like, feminism empowered me, white feminism. The Chicana movement empowered me, and thankfully I grew from that, and I wasn't stuck in this empowerment phase, which a lot of us get stuck in, which is I'm empowered, and I like, now I realize that I'm oppressed either by like patriarchy or by my machismo or racism, and you learn all this history that you never knew, and it's like this very like amazing thing, but then people get stuck there, and there's no growth, and there's no critique, and there's no accountability for like your own actions. It's just this romanticization of empowerment, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like that too I did everything like the typical Chicana did, you know, like very like, just like, oh, you know, I'm so empowered by my culture, and like, let's wear it on a t-shirt, and like, let's appropriate this indigenous identity while we're at it, right? And like, no one ever stops to think about it, right? Because that's what I mean with the Chicano movement. Like, if you critique it, everyone jumps on you and they're like, what are you doing? You know, like, you're a traitor or whatever. So for me and Ruben, it was like being able to get past that phase, and also trying to get other people to move past that phase. And what we mean by that phase is, again, not being stuck in this empowerment, which also ties to white feminism, where they're, you know, again, feminism can be empowering when you find out about it and you're like liberated, you know, but then if someone tries to critique you or be like, you know, you should also not do that, right? Which it's like, you should also think about women of color. You should also think about like trans women. You should also like check yourself and your own privileges. It's like people put a wall up because they just want to live in their own like girl power and like their own, oh, I'm a Chicana, like thing, without having to do any self-work after that.
Yeah. I think like the most harassment I get online is whenever I critique like white feminism, especially like cis focused white feminism. Mm-hmm. And when I critique the Chicano movement, particularly when I critique like this normalization of like appropriation of indigenous cultures, oof, like they basically ran me off the internet in October, which is fine because I needed time off to work on grad school, but like still.
So,
but no, oh my God, that was like the worst, probably one of the worst waves of harassment I got was like, people sending me death threats because I was like, just because like, you know, you took a DNA test, like doesn't mean you're indigenous, like, because there's this normalization of that, that it's easy for a lot of Latinx folks to be like, white people like claiming to be like indigenous because they took a DNA test, that's whack. But all of a sudden, like if they're from Latinx backgrounds, like that, they can't compute that. Mm-hmm. They cannot compute that. And so that gets frustrating, especially when you have like actual indigenous struggles in Latin America who do not get attention, who are, you know, oppressed by like a mestizo supremacist culture, right? And so that's always I always remember like that to prepare for a wave of harassment when I critique that. The other one was when I first shared one of my friend Jamie Grace Alexander's work. She's a black trans girl from St. Louis who wrote about like the pink pussy hat, like one of the first critiques of the pink pussy hat, which is like, I'm black and I'm trans, and like whatever like this pink pussy hat is supposed to like signify like does not apply to me. And so I just shared her work, and oh my God, that was like, I'm glad that I didn't share directly from Jamie Grace's account because she would have dealt with harassment for months. But that was another thing too. So I say that just to paint a small picture because Cassandra has been in the game for like years, right? And so the fact that she continues to like even do any work online is like really, is really big.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I got a lot of haters online. there. it's a lot, but it's also, I mean, I don't know, we're really talking about like harassment online, but obviously if you're, you know, a woman of color, if you're queer, you're if you're trans, right, and you're saying all these things, you're a bigger target for harassment. I think it's just something that we have to, like, deal with, which is fucked up. But, I mean, I think for me, the one time I also lost like 500 followers for posting also a post about the pussy hats. So that should tell you, like, 500, like, just in one day. And it's not even like, oh, I'm so sad I'm losing followers, but it was just like, it kind of shocked me, because I'm always like, this is the post that's going to upset people. And it's always just like the most basic one, because I think saying that, you know, maybe you shouldn't wear this fucking pussy hat because trans women and, like, black women and all these people are telling you why it's wrong is not, like, this radical thing that you should be upset about. And so it was just like, oh, okay, we have, like, a lot of work to do. But also, like, I don't know why white feminists are following me.
I think that's the thing that gets me sometimes, that I like, a part of it is like, holy shit, like, what kind of following did I nurture that this... I think that's...
It is.
That, I think that's the thing that fucks me up. And that's the thing that I have to, like, take a minute and be like, I have to talk about this more often, because obviously these people feel comfortable here, and I don't want them to feel comfortable here.
Yeah,
so.
Like, when I see men comment, I'm block. I'm like, wow, I haven't posted anti-men posts in a while.
Miss Andrew now.
Miss Andrew mode activated. This other time I lost, also, I don't know how many followers, because... So there was this awful, like, challenge going on Twitter. I forgot what it's called, like, MAGA challenge, and it was, like, a bunch of Trump supporters, like, freestyling, and it was so embarrassing, but I was watching them, you know, because it was funny, and there was one, and she was, like, a Latina, and it was just, like, so cringy that I had to share it with everyone, because it was so funny, and so I posted it, and I was like, you know, good morning, whatever, and people started saying it was me in the video, and, like, this person doesn't even look like me. I mean, like, she's a Latina, obviously, but, like, it clearly was not me. And all these people were like, wow, you're a Trump supporter. How dare you? And they were, like, so mad. Like, they were threatening me. And I was like, this is not me. And I had to remove it, because it was just, like, it's funny now. But at the time, I was so, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, who are these people that are following me that they think, first of all, that this looks like me. But, like, second, that I would post, like, that everything I posted in, like, 5 years, all of a sudden I came out as a Trump supporter. Like, it doesn't... It was just so ridiculous, but it's... I think it also tells me... Oh, my God. I don't know. That I think I get a lot of followers just, like, through people sharing, you know, like, they'll share my work and their friends, like, oh, that's a good post, I'll follow it, because it was this funny meme or because I agreed with this. But then when you start talking about other things, that's, like, when people get mad. But I also did read an article about that kind of relevant of also, like, who is our work for, if there's a bunch of like men following my work or white women or people that do feel comfortable saying these things on your page, right? Because sometimes I get white, like, high school boys commenting racist things. I'm like, how did you get here? Like, I'm very confused. So I don't know. I guess it's just, like, the internet, people just kind of follow, or sometimes, you know, there's just trolls. That's what they do. Russian bots. What? They're real.
No. Are they?
They are. That's what Trump said.
Or is it like some Red Scare shit?
Yeah. But,
Yeah, that brings us to our next point. Latinxers don't understand sarcasm.
Not all.
No, because you posted, okay, that Trump video, you were like, hi, it's me, I'm back. And...
Well, I said yes, because I had my Wi-Fi cut off, and I was like, got my Wi-Fi back, and there,
oh,
that, you know.
Rough times.
It was rough times. It was rough times. It's the wage gap.
That was the whole arc of our podcast, where it was just like, hi, I'm Ruben, hi, I'm Cassandra, and we're broke. And, like, ooh, rough times.
Yeah. Stop.
We have 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. Cool. I guess we have to wrap it up. Mm-hmm. But,
And so that kind of...
Sorry, it's because this whole time we had, like, this outline, and I was like, but I want to drag men. Like, where, you know, where, how are we going to transition into dragging men? And it's always just like, here we are. Let's drag them.
So I think that brings us... Did we cover representación?
I guess not.
Because we were supposed to get there.
Yeah, we were going to get there.
And then we just, like...
We drive. We segued. Yeah. Yeah, going from, like, empowerment, I guess, kind of ties into representation as well. Something that we talk a lot about also in our podcast and in our work, which is this... That our end goal is representation, whether it's on TV, whether it's, like, anywhere in media or even in, like, politics, right? That if there's someone that looks like us, then that's empowerment and that's the end goal. And, again, that's, like, all we need. And we never critique these people's, like, actual politics, which I think representation is important. I'm not going to, you know, say that it's not right, especially, I think... For children, like, I wish that I would have seen a lot of people who look like me when I was growing up, because I think it would have, I don't know, maybe made me feel not as alone or so, like, I don't know if lonely is the right word, right? Even now when I see, you know, characters that are bisexual or, like, brown women, I get excited, right? But that's not my, I don't think that representation is going to fix anything, because if it has, you know... Racism would be a thing, anti-black racism, right? For example, everyone always talks about, like, we need more representation, and it's just, like, we are very comfortable taking representation from anybody just to say, like, that we have it. And then, again, when we critique these people or the type of representation that it is, people get really uncomfortable because that's their politics. Their politics are representation, and that's it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really upset us was when, like, there was this trending hashtag that was, like, educate Latina. And, like, that was, like, the hashtag, like, and all these, like, you know, young Latinas, like, you know, talking about, like, getting their degrees. And, like, that was, you know, it's important, but also, like, the captions were just, like, not the best. It was, like, you know, unlike other Latinas who, like, you know, were, like, young moms or, like, you know, dropped out and things like that. I was, like, okay, you can celebrate yourself without, like, disempowering somebody else, right? So I think that's something that we have to be critical about, is, like, when does our empowerment disempower somebody else, right? And if our continued empowerment continues disempowering, then we have to re-engage what empowerment means, right? Because, you know, Ted Cruz is an empowered Latino, like...
Educated Latina,
right?
Like, courted by the coronavirus.
Oh, yeah! I forgot they were hella quarantined. Oh, my God. You know, poder a mi hermano Latino.
But, yeah, so, like, when we're talking about, like, oh, Latinx representation, it's, like, yeah, Ted Cruz. Like, who are you talking about, right? Because, like, some people really just go and vote for Ted Cruz because he's Latino. And it sounds ridiculous to a lot of people, right, because Ted Cruz is awful. But that is the extension that some people are like, oh, well, he's Latino. He's, you know, he's on my side, or I'm going to vote for him.
Or for Beto, or Latino brother.
Yeah.
I saw his house the other day. He just lives like a normal place. That was weird.
I'm gonna rob him.
I'm from LA, so, like, our politicians are, like, somewhere else. Like, so it was kind of weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
But, you know, Beto's Latino. What's his last name? Roberto? Rodriguez.
Oh. No, what were we talking about?
I don't know. I just got distracted.
Yeah,
by
Ted Cruz. Stop. About Ted Cruz?
Oh, what does empowerment mean?
When we're
the people?
But I forgot.
So people settle for shit like that.
By Ted Cruz, yeah. Just for example,
Gina Rodriguez, but we're not gonna talk about her.
Let's not get into Gina Rodriguez. She's a hot mess. Just any, you know, we can name all these people. We can name all these people, and it's fine to, like, a good example for me, I guess, would be AOC, right? Alexandria Cortez, right? Ocasio Cortez. She is a young Latina, a millennial who got elected into Congress, right? And that's fucking amazing. And I think that I don't agree with her on all things. You know, I'm not like, oh, AOC forever or anything like that. But I see, you know, she's not my representation. I'm not going to put my whole being into her being elected into Congress, because that means that if she does something, I wouldn't be able to critique her. Because even when I critique her, people get really upset, right? Because they're like, how dare you, like, bring another Latina down? And it's like, she's Latina, but that doesn't absolve her of doing any wrong. That doesn't mean that we can't critique her and hope that she reads this and, you know, makes changes, right? Not just with AOC, but that's just like one person I feel that is above like critique, again, because she's a young and she's awesome, right? Like, I'm not like, oh, AOC forever or anything, but I hope that she can grow. She actually follows me, so, you know, I give her tips.
Hermanas, you know? Unidas.
I'm like, hey, girl. Hermana, who were you going to talk about?
No, I was just like, your hermanas unidas en la lucha.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But also, like, saying, you know, there was, like, that one article where, like, where she, the red lipstick. And
oh,
like,
that was a good. It was like, why do we keep, because to contextualize it, like, the first vote that was, that came into, that she had to vote on, had to do with, like, expanding,
ICE funding
in order to, like, end the, what's going on, the government shutdown?
Mm.
Yeah, and so she voted to expand ICE, and even though, like, the thing didn't go through with Bill, it still hurt a lot of, Latinas who, like, experience, like, border violence. And so there was this powerful essay titled something to the effect of, like, why did we keep voting for brown girls with hoop earrings who just want to, like, bomb other brown girls with hoop earrings, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's one example of when she let down a lot of folks, right? And so to speak to Cassandra's point, I think that the problem comes when we, where our own personal identity is, like, inseparable from representation politics, right? When representation is the end-all be-all of our politic, right? Like, I'm not gonna lie, like, as a non-binary, like, brown person, like, seeing, like, a, like, that, seeing that type of identity presented someday, like, it would be great, but I'm not holding my breath. And even, like, seeing LGBT representation in general, like, that is cute and all, but when you got shit, like, you know, like, the first, you know, series of, like, the L word being, like, so, like, cringe and, like, white feminist, right? And, like, you know, seeing, like, Latinx queer folks, like, in Vida, and then all of them being white and kind of, like, demonizing the brown characters in that show, that was also cringe. Like, seeing things like that, like, is just reaffirms that we have to go beyond just representation, right? Which is one, going back to, like, the Elizabeth Warren point, like, people were like, oh, you just didn't want to vote for her because she was a woman. And I'm like, no, like, unfortunately, like, I hate to admit that she would have been my second choice, right? Like, if, you know, Bernie dropped that earlier, I would have, like, voted for her, like, you know, not, like, super, like, enthusiastically, but I would have voted, like, whereas now with Joe Biden, like, the way the shit's set up, like, I would literally chew off my leg before, like, voting for him, but I have that privilege because I live in California, which is, like, not a swing state at all, right? But because people projected their own, like, feelings and their own personhood into Elizabeth Warren, she's beyond critique, right, to a lot of folks, including a lot of people of color. One of the biggest, this election cycles are unfortunately always, like, growing pains, because you see a lot of people that you've respected do a lot of stupid shit, a lot of fucked up shit, right? Like, I'm not gonna name names because it hurts to even think about it, but there's a lot of folks who campaign hard for some people who I was like, your politics, the politics that you said you represented are in complete opposition to this candidate that you're now going hard for. So that's, yeah, that's been hard. I think in 2016 for me, the big growing pain was, like, completely, like, I think I had hope for, like, the system might work, but not, like, in a super liberal way, just, like, in a my vote matters kind of way, to, like, we need to, like, really fucking put our heels on the dirt and, like, start building more coalitions where it can affect people on a day-to-day basis. We have 4 minutes.
Yeah. So if you voted for Joe Biden, you can leave this room. No, but they're I guess, like, bringing it back around. This whole talk is about Elizabeth Warren. Yeah, it's just right now, it's when she dropped out, it was this thing of, like, is she going to endorse Sanders, right? And going back to this, just all these awful tweets that are like, she doesn't owe men anything. And I'm like, what? Like, this isn't, like, some cute patriarchy, like, feminist thing. Wow. This is, like, people need fucking healthcare. Like, what are you talking about? Or, like, someone was like, I hope Elizabeth Warren never drops out. I know she dropped out. But before that, they're like, I hope she stays in the running until, even if she doesn't win. Like, it didn't make sense. And it's just,
Oh, my God. The worst one was, like, Elizabeth Warren is basically telling Biden and Sanders, like, I'm really working on myself right now. And I'm just like, where?
We're not dating. Like, this is, like, it's just, like, reducing, like, these things into this, just,
people,
I don't even.
People took the wrong, like, message from the personal is political. Like, let's just say that. Like, that's, like, you know, the personal is political in that there's everyday things that affect you, the more marginalizations you have. Not like the personal is political, like, oh, Bernie Sanders won't call Elizabeth Warren back, or vice versa, right? Or you know, Elizabeth Warren is, like, a strong, independent woman. Like, that's not the way that personal is political, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the way, because we've reduced social justice to, like, these, like bullet points that people, that's all people take away, right? And that's kind of, like, the... That's kind of the process of neoliberalism, right? That we defang a lot of movements in order to suit the capitalist machine.
Yeah, and that's all feminism is right now, right? Like Forever 21 shirts.
I thought we steal.
Like, we do steal.
Not even.
I steal all the time. I stole today, actually. But I guess we have to wrap it up. But I don't want to steal on. I'm a thief. I'm resisting capitalism. That's what I'm doing. But
okay, Winona Ryder.
But yeah. So I don't know. Listen to our podcast. I don't know where we're ending. But
yeah. So right now we're gonna go into a Q&A. They wanted us to leave a full hour. You can ask us about, like, you know, shit we said on stage, shit we said in our episodes, in our own blogs. Don't ask us about Twitter. I'm just playing. No. Yeah.
Don't ask us. Oh, this isn't even a microphone. Don't ask us.
Okay, Ariana Huffington leaning in. Like.
Don't ask us about self-care. We get that question all the time, and we're always like... I steal. I just said that. Like, that's my self-care.
Pokemon and self-medication.
And Carly Rae Jepsen. That's like, we say this all the time and people always ask us. And, like, I get it because I'm also like, yes, like, we want a self-care, you know? But going back to, like, what Ruben said earlier, it's just, like, self-care has become this kind of, like, meaningless thing that also, like, ties into capitalism, right? Like, how much money can I spend on myself to make myself feel better? And it's just, like, a lot of self-care for me is, like, community. And it's not necessarily, you know, a bath bomb. Like, it's, like, yes, again, like, if that's, you know, everyone, if you need to do that, like, do that. But it's also, like, just, like, these very, like, materialistic things that for me it's, like, community is very important. And it's something that I feel like a lot of people don't really have or, like, don't want to, like, try to connect with other people.
Yeah, because it kind of puts, like, the weight of, like, the responsibility of dealing with capitalism on the individual, right? So, like, my work day and my family life is shit, so let me go buy this thing, right? Mm-hmm. Which, and let me go isolate, right? So for me, like, we're answering the question before they even answer it.
Yeah.
So for me, like, it is, like, the group chat. It is, like, I'm lucky that I've, you know, been doing work for, like, the better part of a decade now. No, I'm 31, so more than a decade. Fuck, I'm old. I always think I'm 27 still. Like, I think that's the age that, like, I got stuck on in my head for 12 years now. Oh, my God. I'm so traumatized. And I've been lucky to have, like, a good network of folks who, like, reach out and, like, have my back. And that, to me, is what care means, right? It's, like, folks who are willing to take the weight of capitalism off me while in order for me to recover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just a good quote, and I don't have it right now, and I don't want, like, I don't
know. But let me bring it up anyway.
let me get my phone. No, but it's a, I don't know the exact word right now, but it is, like, yelling, I think it's, like, you know, when we yell at people, like, self-care, like, when something's wrong, and it's, like, what they really need is community care. Going back to, like, Ruben, it's just, like, isolating ourselves, and, like, we're just, like, oh, yeah, you know, go do this, and, like, go take a bath, versus, like, what do you need? How can I show up for you? How can I take some of this weight off, even if it's just listening to you, even if it's just, like, here's $5, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, a lot of us don't have money, right? But it's, like, just that, like, so that community and, like, love, right? Because that's what love is. And I think with us, you know, like, our podcast is called Bitter Brown Femmes. So, like, yeah, we're angry, and, like, we, like, talking shit, and we're not going to go, I guess, right now into, like, what the, you know, Bitter Brown Femmes or whatever, but it's just, like, at the end of the day, the reason that we do this, the reason that I'm online and I deal with all this harassment, and the reason, you know, that I organize in El Paso is because of love. And a lot of organizers, like, that is love, right? Like, we can't, like, there's no justice without love, right? Angela Davis said that, and she's amazing. So at the end of the day, it's just, like, how do we show up for other people? Like, how do we love other people in a non-capitalistic way? So you didn't ask, but we gave it to you anyway. So I guess if anyone wants to raise their hand, don't call me old.
First
yeah.
of all, a round of applause for them.
Oh, yes, thank you.
You good?
Oh, you can have mine here.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
What you shared resonates a lot with stuff that's going on in academia. Like, we're a Hispanic-serving institution, a land-grant institution, and we're always trying to get more folks of color because they've been pushed out of the system, and we want students to see themselves reflected in us, right, as their professors. And yet, you're absolutely right. Sometimes it's just maybe what you said about the feminists and white feminists and women of color sometimes embodying or enacting white feminism, right? Mm-hmm. And the same could go for folks of color, right? So this whole idea of being woke or it being represented in academia, I think you maybe think a lot about what does that really mean? In higher education, which is a settler colonial space, right, to begin with. But so I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that and why students, because a lot of them are here for extra credit.
But shut up.
Y'all are the real MVPs here.
So could you say a little bit more about why it's important to know about these things, right? Because sometimes, like, they might be pretending that they're listening to me, for example, in my class. So I think that it's important for them to hear it from somebody else besides me.
Yeah. I love when people get extra credit, come see us, because, like, a lot of the time, like, they don't know who we are, and they're what the fuck?
Oh, they'll take notes?
Last time, was it Cal State? We were at Cal State, and there was, like, people with their laptops. We're like, we're just here to talk to you about Ted Cruz. like I'm just, like, imagine those being their notes. Like, fuck Ted Cruz. Like, but, yeah. I can't really speak a lot on academia. I dropped out of high school. I'm a GED girl. Thank you. Yeah. And I was going to community college, but, you know. There's just, like, so much to navigate. That's not my experience with academia, but just, like, talking about education, you know, I felt like, for me, one of the reasons that, like, you know, people drop out, it's like, oh, they dropped out, their school dropout, and it's like, for me, it's like people were pushed out because they didn't have resources, or for me, my personal experience is there was just, like, I was failing, like, by the time I got to my senior year, I wouldn't have been able to graduate my class, and there was, like, I didn't feel like there was any teachers or counselors that were actually trying to help me. It was just kind of like, I showed up and I was like, why am I here? Mm-hmm. But anyway, even going to community college, you know, as a single mother, like, I don't have money to go back because I got, like, on probation, whatever. But even navigating, like, getting to academia for me is, like, really hard. But I know that a lot of my followers always, like they, you know, they go to the university, and, like, a lot of what they say is very much, like, feeling isolated and excluded from these, like, even they made it to university, but even then, you know, it's just, like, a whole shit show. And it is based on, like, you know, these institutions were not made for us. So for us to be, like, you know, even going to, invited to these universities to speak, I'm just, like, it trips me out, right? Because I'm just, like, these spaces are, you know, we went to, like, what was that, women's college?
I don't know,
in Pennsylvania, and it was like being there.
Oh no, girl, because, like,
it felt like racist. Like, They had us in the building was racist. Like, you step in, I'm like, this was not, like, something that I was supposed to be here, especially not even speaking and, like, getting paid to be here, right? So even being in, like, those spaces to me, or, like, even being here, it's like, I don't know. It's like, I feel it. And again, I'm not even in academia, so I wouldn't even know. But you're going to go to grad school, so maybe you can speak on that more.
Yeah. Got my acceptance letter to one school, like, a week ago. I'm not going to reveal yet, because I'm still waiting for another letter, hopefully. But I'll talk about it. Just because I applied to MFA program in creative writing, and I applied for an MFA program that's fully funded, which is, like, if you are of that route, if that's your life, then you... Looking at all the pages of MFAs, like, girl, they're white as fuck. They're, like, and, like, not even, like, white as fuck, but, like, historically white. Like, it's bad. And there's only, like, 4 spots for, like, 1,000 apps, so I was very lucky. But it actually, like, it took me 9 years to graduate from college. I got accepted to UC Davis right out of high school. Just, like, family situation was really horrible. My parents... didn't file taxes and then when I applied for financial aid, it was, like, denied, and so they were paying out of pocket for school. But then I came out when I was, like, the morning after prom, and they had kicked me out, and then my high school counselors made them take me back in, because they're like, we don't have, like your child's living in their car, like, this is not, like, okay for you, like, you can get in trouble, like, blah, blah. And so they took me back. And then they were like, we'll pay for your college, but, like, we don't want to see none of this gay shit, right? 2 quarters later, they're like, wow, you went to college and you're still gay? And it's like, yeah. Like, like, if anything, like, I just discovered...
I'm gayer.
I discovered the term queer, and, like, now, like, gay isn't sufficient. Like, right? And so they were like, no, we're not paying for this gay shit. And so they... that was, like, the final time where I was, like, kicked out, and... Like, luckily I had a community that held me down and blah, blah, blah. But when I tried to go back to school and I tried to appeal a financial aid, they were like, you have to wait to see if your family situation changes. And I was like, if I didn't have my community and I got this response from them, like, if I was like so many youth, because 40% of the homeless population, the youth population is LGBT, and most of them are Black and or Latinx. Right? So if I was one of them, like, constantly, because there was moments of my life where I was homeless, then I would have been shit out of luck, like, even worse. And so that was one of the ways that, like, we say that, like, these schools are not built for us, but they kind of are built to have students of color in, but they're built to destroy us. Like, that's essentially what it is, right? And so there was a long period of time where I was, like, just working, trying to save up. Impossible to save up, especially when you're poor. Like, eventually I qualified for financial aid, because you have to have like 2 tax cycles in order to be considered independent, and, like, then they gave me financial aid. And so I went back to school, and that's when, like, the whole Hispanic serving institution thing was, like, starting to, like, come in vogue. And, well, because it is very, it's unfortunately, it's a fucking trend, because they have all these little Latinx kids, and there's these type of initiatives. If you're not familiar with the Hispanic Serving Institution Initiative, it's this initiative to have at least 23% of the student population be Latinx, right? And that includes people from Spain, international students, and so forth, right? And so it's just about, like, recruiting them, right? Signing up for school. There's very little there about graduation rates. So what ends up happening is that they get all these little Latinx kids in, but because the school is not culturally competent, a good 40% of them immediately drop out, like, within a year. Like, and that's not even an exaggeration. Back when I was still heavily involved in the retention side of things, academic retention side of things, the retention rate in California universities was something like 47% for a 4-year graduation rate, right? Compared to something like a 60 to 70% graduation rate in 4 years for white students. Right? So it's dire, right? And it gets worse, like, you know, the more marginalizations you have. And so for me, it's like, what good is this grant that some schools have abused, right, that have used for other things that are not devoted to Latinx students. What good is that grant if you're not going to make sure these kids succeed? Or if they do graduate, how much debt are they graduating with, right? Because one of the things that fucks me up is when people are like, you know, what good is, you know, alleviating student debt going to do if, like, you know, for our economy? And I'm like, girl, there's no day that I do not wake up and not think about the overbearing, like, debt that I have, right? Student debt. And so for me, it's they have no cultural competence. Like, what do they do for undocumented students? People who have mixed status families, people who are LGBT and Latinx, right? People who whose English is their second language, right? People from, I went to public university, public school, I mean. I didn't know that public schools were not built like my school. My school had 6,000 students in it, right? I had to crowd surf, essentially, like, from class to class, right? Like, we were, like, sardines, like, walking like this to class, right? Which makes it really easy to bully people, which is, like, another story. So I, like, regularly got shoved, like, as I was walking to class, right? Like, being gay is rough. But, so for me, it's, like, there has to be a concerted effort to make schools culturally competent, not in a band-aid type of way, because a lot of times they're like, well, building the center. And it's like, okay, is that center safe for students? Are they culturally aware? Like, safe for what students? Is it only safe for able folks, cis folks? Like, is that who is, like, because if not, that's not an accessible center, right? What grants are available for people? What populations are you counting, right? Because, you know, some rich, like, Spaniard kid, like, kind of counting as Latinx is not...
Beto.
is not the wave, right? What tutoring services, like, it goes beyond just that, right? Because for me, like, I know, like, I'm naturally funny, but, like, in the classroom, specifically in the English classroom, like, the English major is white as fuck. Like, it was, like, me, one other Latinx person, and, like, one black girl that I saw in my classes for, like, 3 years, right? Everybody else, like, in classes, they were, like, up to as big as 70, as small as 12. When the smaller it got, the least people of color you saw, right? We had to count our allies, right? So, luckily, like, the white LGBTs and Davis were all right most of the time. Uh-huh. So they advocated for us too. But like people were regularly just like, whenever I raised my hand, they would preemptively laugh sometimes. And it was like dealing with that kind of shit. And like there was some times when I was like, oh my God, should I just not laugh? Do I sound ridiculous? Like, is that why people are laughing? And so eventually I had to like take on like a, what to call like a defense mechanism of like regularly like critiquing like the classroom itself, like I'm in a room full of white people, like blah blah blah, a room full of So, it goes beyond like these grants. Like, who are those grants for? How much of this grant is going to go to the fucking administrators, right? Because it's been proven time and time again that like there's hella tuition, but less tenure track positions and more money for administrators, right? Like that, and that's across the board. So, I think that there has to be special attention to all of this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think yellow person.
Hey, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Did you want to get
into
this? And the chisme, and I'm very, very happy that Anna, Dr. Anna Lopez extended the invitation to you.
Thank you, Anna.
Anna really, like, put you in the audience.
Thank you, Anna.
We were waiting to go to the Mujeres Activas de Letras y Cambio Social conference at the airport sometime last year. And she's like, guess who I just saw at the airport?
What's Starbucks?
Cassandra. And I'm like, who's Cassandra? Chicanisma. And then she started like to send me all these links to your podcast.
Oh,
I just want to thank Dr. Ana Lopez, who recently defended her dissertation.
Yes. Educate Latina.
That great chisme that you share with us, even though a lot of it was on Elizabeth Warren, I think it was great overall, and you tackled issues that we are currently experiencing here at this institution and, you know, our personal lives, and I thank all of you for sticking around for 2 hours.
Yes, thank you.
For the great turnout. And we have community members here that I want to acknowledge, and not just students. So I really like the audience and the turnout that we had. Muchísimas gracias to our sponsors. And so I don't know if you want to stick around for autographs or pictures.
I mean,
also,
we're here.
You're going to get interviewed by our local TV station.
Yay!
Thank you.
We're down for pictures. We just need to pee.
Yes, we're down to talk, but we need to use the restroom. Thank you.